For all my women out there, I just want you to know that you are a boss. Women have to be at the table for technology and innovation. And if not, we'll simply create our own. Don't feel like you shouldn't be a part of the tech space just because there aren't many women in the room. That's exactly why we need you to be there. Girl, don't forget to rep your set in these tech spaces, aka rep your culture. You are the face of technology and the face of the future. Hey guys, super quick commercial break. So many of you are starting to launch your own businesses because you have ideas and you have time during the quarantine to develop them and to build them. So this podcast is sponsored by Wallwood Technologies, a development firm that helps non-technical founders and business owners develop technology solutions from websites to web applications, mobile apps, and so much more. Send them an email at hello@wallwaytech.com or fill out their contact form on their website at wallwaytech.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Women in Tech with Ariana podcast. With me, Ariana, as your favorite host. For those of you, it's your first time tuning in. Welcome to an amazing community of women in tech, where we talk about the latest news in technology, hear stories from women in tech from all around the world, and share tangible tools and resources like access to funding. We give away free materials, job opportunities, tech conferences of the year, and so much more. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button and leave a review in the podcast app or on the website you're currently using to listen to this episode. Today, guys, we have a super special guest, attorney Andrea Evans. Attorney Evans is the owner of the law firm of Andrea Hintz Evans, where she provides patent, trademark, and copyright legal services. Attorney Evans has worked at the United States Patent and Trademark Office as both a patent examiner and a trademark examining attorney after graduating from George Washington Law School in Washington, D.C. She's also a graduate of the Historically Black College and University, Spelman College, and the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, where she obtained a Bachelor's of Science in Mathematics and a Bachelor of Civil Engineering. Attorney Evans is also the best-selling author of two books, all about inventing and all about trademarks. Attorney Evans is very passionate about STEM and is the founder of KidGeneer, an educational program that is designed to accelerate a child's interest and growth in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Attorney Evans, we are so excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much, Ariana, for inviting me to be here. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, and we have some really good questions for you, so we're just going to jump right into it. Your story is so intriguing as I was doing research, and I really want to know, what sparked your interest for being an attorney? Because you went to Spelman College in Atlanta, which is where I'm from, so shout out to Atlanta. And also, I went to HBCU, so shout out to all my Tuskegee people that listen to the show. But you went to Spelman College in Atlanta, and you did their dual degree engineering program, where you got a degree in both mathematics and a civil engineering degree from Georgia Tech. You know, so did you always know that you wanted to be an attorney? What sparked the interest for you to go straight from law school right after finishing a degree in engineering?
So I actually grew up always wanting to be a judge. I used to watch the People's Court with my grandmother every day after school, and I wanted to be a television judge. And I was always that child that was speaking up for everybody. I was an advocate, and if something wasn't right, I was, you know, that child. And what was interesting, though, is I was very fortunate to grow up in a household amongst other engineers. So my mother's an engineer, my aunt and uncles are engineers. My grandfather was always tinkering with things. And so they really encouraged me as a child to, you know, work on different science projects and encouraged me to actually pursue my math and engineering degree. And so I used to watch the People's Court and knew that I wanted to go to law school, but of course I knew I needed an undergrad degree. So I loved science, I loved engineering, and I was actually very fortunate to receive a full tuition academic scholarship to Spelman and Georgia Tech from NASA. And then every summer I worked at NASA, Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. And after I graduated from Spelman and Georgia Tech with a dual degree engineering program, I thought that I would pursue law and I would do environmental law because I was very passionate about all the environmental injustice in different communities. And I just had never been to DC and figured what better place to study law. And I applied to George Washington Law School. And when I got there, I actually met professors who encouraged me to pursue intellectual property law because you do have to have that engineering or science degree to pursue patent law. And so I had never even heard of patent law, didn't even know what a patent was, but I fell in love with the classes and the rest is history.
Wow, that is amazing. And so, you know, you talk about how, you know, you didn't know what a patent was, like, you know, when you were encouraged to go into patent law. And, you know, I was recently in one of your Zoom sessions with the National Bar Association where you were talking about the differences between patents, trademarks, and copyrights. You know, so what are the differences between those things?
So intellectual property is divided into three parts: patents, trademarks, and copyrights. And so simply put, you would patent an invention, trademark the name of that invention, and copyright written materials. So you would patent the television, trademark Sony, the name of that television, and then copyright the TV instructions or any of your favorite television shows. So that's the way you keep it straight. And it's so interesting because all of us have some type of intellectual property. And I'm so passionate about participating in interviews like this and speaking as much as I can on intellectual property, because as you know, I'm an expert in this area. But most importantly, I didn't even know about it until I got to law school. So many everyday people don't understand intellectual property and don't protect their rights just because they don't understand it.
Right. And with that, I'm curious to know, you know, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see entrepreneurs and inventors make with their applications? Because like you said, like a lot of people just completely overlook the intellectual property piece of their business.
Well, you know, timing is everything. So let's break it apart. So for instance, if you have an invention and it is something that's patentable, if you've already disclosed that invention and it's been 1 year or more, you lose the right to file a patent application. It's actually given away to the public according to the law. So as soon as you have an idea and you're able to articulate how to actually turn that idea into a real invention, so how to actually make or use it, you need to contact a qualified patent attorney like myself so we can do some research and determine if you have something that's patentable. And for patents, it's the first to file. And so you want to rush to get that filing date, because if someone beats you to the filing date, you can lose your rights in being able to pursue patent protection. Now, when you talk about trademarks, what's interesting about trademarks is it is the first to use the trademark. So let's say someone is listening and they say, oh, I've been in business for 5 years, I better get a trademark. We go and do research and determine that Jane Doe has already filed for that trademark. You can challenge Jane Doe, but that challenge is litigation. So it can actually cost you more money if you sit back and wait and don't take action.
Interesting. And so patents, it's the first to file with the actual USPTO, and trademark is the first to use, you said, correct?
It's the first to use, but if someone beats you to that filing, their application is cited against you. So in order to prove that you used it before them, you have to sue them.
Absolutely. Okay. And, you know, you worked for the United States Patent and Trademark Office before starting a law firm as both a patent examiner and a trademark examining attorney. Can you let our listeners know what's the difference between those two positions?
Yes, I was so fortunate to work at the Patent and Trademark Office. And what's unique about my expertise, like you said, is that I did work on both sides. And so as a patent examiner, my role was simply that, to examine patent applications. So applications would be filed and my role would be to conduct the prior art research and determine if they were patentable inventions. Now, 90% of patent applications are rejected when you file them. But, you know, from working at the patent office, I understand that is just the nature of the patent system, you know, of 90% being rejected. So just because you get a rejection doesn't mean you don't have something that's patentable. Right. So I did that for 3 years as a patent examiner and I loved it. But I was a bar patent attorney, as well as I had already passed the patent bar, and working as a patent examiner, my role was not a quote unquote attorney, although I was actually paying for my license and at the Texas bar, and I had already passed the patent bar. And so I decided to apply for a position to work as a trademark examining attorney. And in that capacity, I examined trademark applications and I loved it. I really did love my time there. And it gave me a lot of good hands-on experience that I'm able to transfer now as a patent and trademark attorney on the outside, helping my clients to get patents and trademarks.
And you know, Attorney Evans, is it a myth that if I have an idea for a patent or a trademark for my business, all I need to do is write it down on a piece of notebook paper and mail it to myself. And because of that legal stamp from the United States Postal Service, it is now a legal document and no one can come for my business. Is that true?
Now, Ariana, you know, that's one of the biggest myths. And, you know, I'm not even going to laugh because people actually believe that.
Yeah.
And just because we don't talk about it and people don't understand it and people are burying inventions and they're mailing themselves those. But, you know, that piece of paper is only worth the stamp that you use. So save that money that you would pay for those stamps and hire an attorney. If it were that simple, we wouldn't even have intellectual property attorneys.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, I will be honest on the show and say this before all of our listeners and say, I realistically did not know that until I was at your session in New York at Black Women Talk Tech. And you talked about that because for years I had heard people tell me, like, I think it was from one of my parents or something like that, or maybe my grandparents, but they told me, you know, all you need to do is write, and they heard it from someone else, right? So-and-so told so-and-so. And all you need to do is write it down and mail it in the letter. And I can't tell you, you know, how many of my friends in business who I've told that to. And this, again, this is before, you know, coming to your class or whatever, because I thought it was the truth. And I don't think I've ever even Googled it. It's just that I heard it so much that you just think that it's common knowledge. But when I sat in your session, literally February of this year, I was like, oh, wow. So this is not legit. I don't even know how that started.
Well, just like you say, you're saying now, it's almost like that game where you pass the message, right? And by the time it gets to the person that's supposed to repeat what you said, forget it. You know, it's not even what you originally started with. So yeah, I'm glad we're talking about that. And actually, I have a newsletter. And if people listening text Evans IP Law to 33777, I send out a trademark myth book, you know, that an actual ebook that will dispel some of those myths.
That is amazing. And I will say, guys, like, I totally vouch for her email list because as soon as I saw Attorney Evans at the conference a couple of months ago, I immediately signed up for your email list. And you have some great content. It's actually how I heard about the Zoom session that you did with the National Bar Association. So make sure that you guys definitely subscribe to her email list. Now, you know, many of us, right, who are listening to this know you because of your famous case against the famous rapper, founder of Death Row Records and Beats by Dre Headphones, Dr. Dre. There was a case back in 2018 where your client, Dr. Dreon Birch, an OBGYN, was fighting to file a trademark to protect his name, medical services, and medical products. This case was a very big deal in the media. Can you tell us about what exactly happened with your client?
So it was a very interesting case that really brought awareness to trademarks, you know, so kudos to America's OBGYN, Dr. Dre. So Dr. Dre is known in America as America's OBGYN. He's a celebrity gynecologist, a medical mogul, and more. And he decided to protect his trademark for his brand, Dr. Dre. So when he filed that trademark application, there's a period of time where third parties can actually challenge that application. So Dr. Dre, the rapper, had his counsel reach out to us to say, hey, you know, cease and desist. The names sound the same. It's going to cause confusion. The way it works for trademarks, though, Ariana, is things can sound the same. The question, though, is if they have the same commercial impression or cause a likelihood of confusion, it could be a problem. So more than one person can have the same name, provided the goods and services aren't related or confusingly similar. So in this case, my client, Dr. Dre, was providing medical services and different products related to things in the medical industry. The rapper and producer was doing just that, rapping and producing and providing those types of services. And of course, we know he does have some other headphones and things like that, but things that were not related. But what's interesting about that case is there's what we call a famous mark. And so we think of Oprah, we think of Nike, you know, as being a famous mark.
Right.
And so although Nike may have a trademark on shoes, if Nike put a stamp on a refrigerator, we may not think that they're making refrigerators, but we know that they can license their name. So we know Oprah's not in the kitchen making soup. She licensed her name, Oprah, to be able to make that soup. So what Dr. Dre, the rapper, was saying is, look, you're going to cause confusion. And because I'm quote unquote famous, people will think that you're trying to make a profit off of my brand. So he basically filed his suit against Dr. Dre, the gynecologist, to say, look, there's a likelihood of confusion. You're diluting my brand by diminishing the value, and I'm famous, you know, so people, it will be some type of confusion. So I'm very proud that, yes, we won that case. Dr. Dre, America's OBGYN, was able to continue with his trademark applications, and now they're all registered. And he has quite an extensive portfolio, but the case went viral, and it was just an amazing eye-opener to the average person, which was great because people started saying, why would a doctor want to even trademark his name in the first place? And it is his name. And the memes were hilarious, but beyond that, it really opened America's eyes to using a name as a brand, you know, something that we think about, that we take for granted.
Yeah. And you mentioned, there's so many, oh my goodness, so many good things that you mentioned, but one of the things that really stuck out to me was that the fact that although Dr. Dre was trying to comfort your client, Dr. Dre, the OBGYN, what really stuck out was that the difference in their services, like Dr. Dre is known, right, for his rapping and, you know, the music and all that good stuff. But Dr. Dre on Verge is, he's producing medical products. So the key there was that the industries were two completely different things.
Two completely different things, but also you can't just license your name to be a medical doctor, right? It's going to require a certain level of education, exams, credentials. And so that was one of the main reasons that we actually won the case, that you can't simply license your name. Now, if Dr. Dre was spelling his name Dr. Drai, which is how he spells it, and maybe he's putting it on potato chips or something like that, maybe they would have had a different case because, right, that's what I'm saying about Oprah and having a famous mark. We can assume that maybe now he's licensing that name to be used on products, but you actually can't license your name for medical services, you know, unless you have those credentials to do that. So that was one of the main points of why we won the case.
That's amazing. And you, so it is like, we can say like you literally beat a billionaire. Like that's a big deal. As a Black woman in this industry, like that is amazing.
Yeah. And you know, it's amazing that Dr. Dre, the gynecologist pressed forward, you know, that he kind of set the tone amongst other doctors. And when I talked to him and I've, you know, talked to him in different interviews, he says, look, you know, if it wouldn't have been him, it would have been someone else. So he really kind of is a hero in the medical industry, you know, because it takes so much hard work and education and experience to be a medical doctor.
Yeah, it does. And I'm so glad that he went through with that. And even when reading your book, right, you have a best-selling book all about trademarks. And all about inventing. And in both of the books, in the dedication section of the book, you know, you have your client, Dr. Dre, the OBGYN, listed in the dedication section, and you thanked him for believing in you and your firm and how you successfully represented him against Dr. Dre, the rapper, which I thought was amazing. But what really stood out was that, you know, you talked about how he inspired you to monetize your law degree, you know, and can you talk about that? Because I know there's someone listening and maybe they're a law student or they're in a completely different industry, but they're trying to figure out how do they monetize their knowledge of a particular subject? You know, what advice did Dr. Dre give you that helped you monetize your degree? And, you know, what were you doing before that, where before you were like truly monetizing it?
So Dr. Dre also is a mentor to several doctors. He has the Momentum in Medicine Conference, and he's the president also of Medical Moguls. And so he actually teaches doctors to monetize their medical degree. And because he saw the importance and recognized the importance of intellectual property, he invited me to be a speaker at his conference. Oh, and wow. So, as you know, being an entrepreneur and just being alive, period, yes, you need a community. You know, yes, community is key. And the people that you are around can either make or break you. Yeah. And so he brought out the best of the best, from book publishers to SEO experts to you name it, you know, everything that you need in a business, and started opening up everybody's eyes to say, hey, consider yourself a brand and monetize your genius, basically. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I've had my firm for 13 years. I love speaking and I love participating in different trade shows as a judge, and you name it. And I've spoken in front of crowds as large as 5,000 people. And because what I do is federal, I can represent clients all over the world, but there's only so much limited time at a show where someone could ask me questions. And I would have people lined up outside of the door just asking me the same questions over and over, like, hey, is this a myth? Is this true or false? Or what do I need to do next? Or am I being scammed? And one thing about this industry is with intellectual property, there are a lot of scams. You know, there are a lot of companies that will say, hey, send this to us for this fee and we'll protect your trademark, or mail this to us and we'll bill this for you. And they have all these different scams. And so what I'm very proud of is I wrote those books to be able to be used as a resource. So at least if someone does not hire my firm for whatever reason, they're empowered and have that knowledge to know what's next. Because often by the time people hear me speak and they contact my firm, they would have been scammed or they would have spent tens of thousands of dollars. And that's heartbreaking because who has money to waste? No one. And so Dr. Dre, after seeing him encourage and push his doctors to do that, you know, the biggest excuse that we all make is we don't have time to do things. And so I just sat down and said, you know, this is my gift. I'm good at explaining this intellectual property concept to others, and I'm going to put it in a book. And I recognize that everyone cannot afford legal services. And so to talk to me and pay hundreds of dollars for a consultation for something that you may not understand, it helps that you're more empowered, that you can invest, you know, $20 or less in books that can really help you. So I'm very proud of those books, actually. And I encourage everyone to take the questions that people ask you on a daily basis and write the answers down, and you blink and you have a book, and you have two best-selling books like me. So I'm very proud of that.
Yes. And, you know, in your book, right, all about eventing and all about trademarks, you know, the question we have is, you know, what are some requirements that a person should have when filing a trademark, right? Like, you have all this experience of people asking you these common questions. So what are some of those common things and common requirements for someone if they're looking to file a trademark?
Well, the first thing is understanding what can be trademarked. So words can be trademarked, sounds can be trademarked, scents, even colors, when we think of the Tiffany blue, three-dimensional shapes can be trademarked. So you look at things as what we call a source identifier. So would someone perceive it as a real brand? So once you have that quote unquote brand, if you can identify goods and services that you're using that on or intending to use it on, you qualify for a trademark application for this federal trademark because you're intending to do business in interstate commerce, which is out of the state, or you're actually doing it. So often people don't know that as soon as you create that name, if you know that you're going to start the Evans IP law firm, you can file that application now as an intent to use application saying, hey, I haven't done it yet, but I intend to. Or if your listeners are listening and they say, you know, I need to trademark the name of my podcast. I need to trademark my software brand. I've been using it. You can actually file a use application. And so the process can take about a year. But once you actually identify what the mark is and the services that you intend to use it on or you're using it on, you have an address and an owner and pay that fee. Those are the minimum requirements to get a filing date for a trademark application.
And, you know, Attorney Evans, this just really speaks to how much your in your books, because I have both of them, you know, really speak to the entrepreneur and challenges us to really think of ourselves as a business. Like, I love that line from Jay-Z where he's like, you know, I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman. Like, he looks at himself holistically, like everything a part of him. And, you know, so for the listeners out there, when you get Attorney Evans' book, make sure you're truly looking through and reading every detail. Make sure you subscribe to her email list. I'm pretty sure that you can reach out to her on social media and ask questions. But it's very important for us to ask ourselves, you know, what can be trademarked about our business? Like, if you, like you said, some of you may have a show, a podcast, or whatever, and you may have a sound that is affiliated with your name. You need to be looking at, you know, how can you trademark that? Of course, obviously you need to hire a lawyer for these specific things, but, you know, your book and your comments here really help us to kind of challenge ourselves to think about that. And I remember, I think 2 years ago, I read an article about how the sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha, how they trademarked their sound that they have that goes along with their organization. And I never even knew before that article that a sound could be trademarked, which is amazing. I don't think many people probably even know that.
Oh, yeah. And one of the most recognized sounds is the NBC chime. Doom, doom, doom. You know, mm-hmm. That's trademarked. So when people associate your brand, you know, whether that even be a scent or a color, we think of red bottom shoes. So when I say to you, I have a Tiffany colored blue box and I have a black box and both of them have a necklace in it, which one do you want? You know that blue identifies a brand that's worth millions of dollars. So you're probably going to go for that Tiffany blue box. So colors can be trademarked. So everyone has some type of intellectual property. So if you're an inventor, you've invented something, you possibly have a patent. If you have a business, you have a trademark. And we're all doing business now in interstate commerce because of the internet. So we all have customers and clients outside of the state. So you qualify for a federal trademark. And then regardless, your websites can be copyrighted. Your notes can be copyrighted. If you are an author, an artist, all of those written works can be protected with a copyright. And they're all equally important because the benefits are priceless. So whatever you can do with real property, you can do with intellectual property. You can license it. You can assign it. You can sell it. You can will it. So when we think about our legacy, we should be considering intellectual property because it can live long beyond your life. You know, like trademarks, for example, don't expire as long as you use them and as long as you renew them. So when you think of Coca-Cola having the oldest trademark since the 1800s, It's incredible. When you think of the value of someone saying, let's name this drink Coca-Cola and where they are today, you know, it's worth the money that you would spend. And so, you know, my trademark, Ariana, is invest in your idea. And I stand by that. You have to make an investment. And it's a small investment when you think of the value of what your intellectual property can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure like many of your clients, similar to Dr. J, they're so excited that they invested in themselves because he was able to protect himself because he went to an expert like you. So you make some really great points here. You mentioned something that stuck out to me. You said that people can trademark a scent. Is that, you know, how is that even possible? Is that because of like the chemical makeup of, you know, let's say it's a candle company and, you know, I have a scent that, you know, people love. You can trademark that and how?
Well, you can trademark it if you prove that people identify a certain scent with your brand. So every time you smell grape scent, you can prove that people think of your car dealership. So when you subscribe to my newsletter and you get that trademark ebook, it talks about that, you know, that someone actually trademarked some kind of grape scent for their dealership. And the way you prove it is by what's called acquired distinctiveness, showing that you have third parties that may have written an article about it to say, everybody knows that the grape scent refers to Bob's car dealership, or, you know, customers come in and it's reported in that way. So it's not something where you would trademark it in the sense where no one else can use that scent. So I'm not owning, and that's a good point with trademarks. You don't own the word for everything, right? You own it only for things that are identical and related to the goods and services you identify. So I can be Andrea for a law firm and you can be Andrea for a podcast about houses because people aren't going to think a law firm is providing a podcast about houses, you know? So that's the way you have to think about it. So they don't control grape scent in the sense where you can never have anything that smells like grape. But yes, if you are in that industry and it's confusing and you start piping that scent through your vents, you can run into a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, now I have a question, you know, how does someone know if they're like, what are some key things for an inventor to know about if their invention is actually patentable, right? So if I'm a person, I'm like, you know what? I have a new idea for some shea butter. I want to reinvent the wheel. How do I actually do that?
Well, three things have to occur for something to be patentable. So first, the invention needs to be useful and solve a problem. So that makes sense. And that's kind of inherent. That's why you invented the product in the first place, to solve a problem. But then the second standard is it needs to be novel or new. And so what that means is if something is identical and it exists prior to you filing your patent application, it's not going to be patentable, you know, because now it already exists. And so if that's the case, it's not patentable. The third standard is the obvious standard. So you ask the question, would it be obvious to one of ordinary skill in the art to take what's out there to combine it to make your invention? And so that's kind of a mouthful, but what that means in plain English is if all you're doing is changing the size, the shape, the color, then those are obvious things, you know, so then that means it's not going to be patentable. So the best thing that you can do first is definitely take advantage of free tools like google.com/patents and do your own search. You know, so that way, when you do schedule a consultation and you have specific questions, you can say, hey, I Googled it and I know that Jane Doe has a chair that can do ABC, but mine does it a little bit different. You know, is that something that's patentable? So the average person can look at something and see that it's identical, but the most common refusal or rejection from the patent office is that obvious rejection where they combine things to try to make your invention. So that's when you need a patent attorney to help you to interpret those results.
Exactly. And also, I just want to let our listeners know, you mentioned this before, but obviously, you know, go and support Attorney Evans' books. Buy both of them. You can get them on Amazon and also at her website, evansiplaw.com. But it's also important for us as entrepreneurs, like sometimes we try to do everything ourselves. Law and anything dealing with patents and trademarks, that we need to hire an attorney. I know I speak to a lot of people who, and I have a couple of friends who have applied for their applications for patents and trademarks. And you even talked about how 90% of applications get denied. But it's very important that we invest in someone who is an expert in their craft, who studied this for years, knows what they're talking about, because Google can only take you so far, right? And when that application gets denied, you need to have someone who knows what they're talking about. So make sure that you're supporting her books, but also, you know, reach out to Attorney Evans and see how, you know, her law firm can help you specifically with your ideas. So I just wanted to make sure I made that point apparent.
Well, thank you. And, you know, it's interesting that people don't realize you can spend more money by not hiring an attorney. Yes. And what I mean by that is you can make so many mistakes that it's going to cost you more to have an attorney fix your mistakes. And unfortunately, some mistakes cannot even be fixed. And so you can jeopardize your rights. So what's interesting is you can get a patent and maybe you're very proud that you wrote your own application and you did get a patent, but the patent can be so narrow that it's not worth anything. You know, it's easy to infringe. So you want to make sure that if you really have the next best idea and the next best thing, you want to make sure you have a patent that's valuable. And, you know, that's why when you see Shark Tank and different shows and you're talking to investors, they want to know, well, what's your intellectual property portfolio look like? What is proprietary here? And you want to be able to intelligently say, this is what is patentable. You know, this is my trademark that I own. And that's what adds value to your business, intellectual property.
You guys, she talks about this, Attorney Evans talks about this in chapter 2 of her book. And I'm not going to go into detail about it because you got to go buy it to see all the details that she's talking about. But she talks about, you know, how do you know that your trademark is weak or strong, which is very important. So yeah, like she said, you could do it yourself, but you really need to talk to an expert who knows what they're doing. So Attorney Evans, I want to make a switch, right? Because I know that you're passionate about STEM. And so I want to talk about, you know, your STEM program, Kidgeneer, and how you've developed a fun and educational environment for youth to learn more about STEM. Can you tell us about the program and how you and your team are helping the youth?
Yes, thank you. So my team is actually my family. So I'm very proud that this is a family run business. And like I said, growing up in Houston, I was able to do my science projects in the science lab at the community college where my mother worked. And I was always encouraged to participate in different STEM programs. So now I'm here in Maryland. And when my daughter was in kindergarten, I took her to school and said, okay, where's the science lab? You know, because I was used to doing things in the science lab, or at least where's the science club? And they didn't have one. And that is actually how Kidgeneer was born, you know, basically just from walking into her school and them saying that they didn't have it. I always kind of had the name Kidgeneer, and of course it's trademarked. But I'm very proud that we formed the program and we provide hands-on educational programs in STEM for children as young as 5 years old. And it's incredible because we've had the program now for over 10 years. Wow. And in those 10 years, some of the children have actually gone to college to pursue STEM majors because of their exposure to this program. And I'm very proud of that, because what I learned is that by the third grade, children permanently lose their interest in STEM. And so for us to out-innovate and out-compete other countries, we have to have that early intervention and have programs such as Kidgeneer. So I'm very proud to be doing my part in the community to give back and mentor young children.
That is truly amazing. I remember when I first, you know, and it does start at that early age. I remember when I first, you know, got introduced to STEM, and I wish it was as young as middle school and elementary school, but it wasn't. For me, it was in high school. But what I do love is that now more curriculums and schools across the country are starting to expose kids early. So that's amazing that you have Kidgeneer. And of course, it's trademarked because you're a lawyer. But I think that's just amazing what you guys are doing with the program.
Thank you. And so my daughter is now a sophomore in high school, and she's interested in STEM, but she also gives back and helps to teach and mentor students in the program, too. So that makes me even more proud to know that she's grown up in the program. And now her younger brother, who's in second grade, is in the program. So it means a lot to me to be able to show that my children that it's important to give back, but then to also have their friends and other children participate in these programs where we teach them video game design, chemistry projects, chemical engineering. And I love that we aren't just saying follow these instructions, but we're actually teaching them engineering. You know, you can't beat a program taught in a curriculum designed by a PhD in education, my mother, and then, you know, having actual engineers like myself and other family members teach the children. It's so rewarding.
That's amazing. And even to have people come back, like, let's say 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and say, hey, like, I'm out here in the field now, or, you know, I'm majoring this in college. That is a very rewarding feeling, I'm sure.
Yes. And one of the best things that happened from Kidgeneer, one of the students chose me as their Black History project. Oh. And put a poster together. And that was probably worth more than any award that I've ever received. And then my prize student, who is my mentee, who started volunteering in Kidgeneer when her younger brothers and sisters were in Kidgeneer, she started volunteering in seventh grade. And I think it was because maybe her parents said, look, your brothers and sisters are here, all of you go and you go volunteer. But she actually, on her own, from seventh grade all the way through her senior year, volunteered with Kidgeneer, and then ended up going to Spelman, my alma mater. Yes, and graduated with honors in 3.5 years with a new degree that they have there related to like medicine. And I don't want to quote exactly what that is, but I'm very proud that she's now graduated from Spelman and she's in Australia in a medical school program. So
goodness, that is rewarding. That is amazing. And, you know, the legacy that you are leaving behind, like as a Black woman in tech, as a Black woman in law, is just truly phenomenal, right? And even more so, Attorney Evans, is that you're in an industry where there are only 5% of attorneys are Black, and less than 2% of them are Black women. You know, you are the owner of the law firm of Andrea Hintz Evans. What, like, straight up real advice do you have for women and women of color, and specifically Black women, right, who are in this industry and have aspirations and are currently, you know, looking to start their own firm or their own, you know, STEM related program? You know, what advice do you have for them?
Well, my advice is to take action. You know, so many people have so many good ideas and they talk about their dreams, but you have to take action and have that confidence to act on those ideas. You know, and I always say that when I'm talking to my clients, you know, to have had this firm for 13 years and have people literally come in with a piece of paper or a napkin with, you know, some rough sketch of an invention, and then to see them on Shark Tank or to see them now selling in Target. Wow. It's just so inspiring that they actually believe in themselves enough to not only protect their intellectual property, but just to pursue their dream, because it only takes one yes.
That's very inspiring. You have to believe in yourself. Confidence is key, because who else is going to push you when the whole world is telling you no? And, you know, I love that you said, you know, it only takes one yes, even if you get 1,000 no's before that. But the fact that you kept, you know, the inventor, the creator, the entrepreneur kept pushing past 1,000 no's or 100 or 2 no's just to get that one yes makes it all worth it.
Yeah. And, you know, even if you just help one person or inspire one person, then you're doing your job, because we all know that we have to lift as we climb. And so somebody inspired you to be where you are. Someone inspired me. And we have to take the time out of our busy schedules to reach back to do the same for our younger generation.
That's amazing. And the last question that I have for you, Attorney Evans, is, what's one thing in your life that you right now are just so grateful for?
I am just so grateful for my family, and just to have my children pushing themselves through this pandemic. You know, we're social distancing as a family, and we're having a lot of fun, but we're handling our business, you know, and I'm very proud of that, that, you know, we are looking in a positive light, you know, as doing our part to social distance and flatten the curve. But having this time where we're not able to really leave and sort of be social has caused us to use innovative ways to keep in touch. And so I feel like we're doing more with these Zoom calls than we probably were doing had we not. You know, it's interesting because you get together with people and then you're on social media with them and you may not see them for months at a time. And then you realize, look, I haven't actually seen you in a year, but I feel like I know you because you're on social media. But when people can't leave the house and can't really see people, we're actually scheduling Zoom calls and being able to see each other and doing a lot of family TikToks and playing a lot of family games. I can't think of, you know, 3 better people, my husband, son, and daughter, that I'd be quarantined with. But I do miss my family in Texas a lot, and I'm thankful for them, that I have their support and that we're able to use technology to still keep in touch.
That's amazing. Well, Attorney Evans, you are just truly a powerhouse. And I just have to say thank you for everything that you've done in tech and, you know, in law, in both of your industries. But, you know, just for the culture, you are a powerhouse. And it's really an honor to have you on the show.
Well, Ariana, thank you so much for inviting me to be here today. And you are a powerhouse, and you're doing your part by showcasing other women in tech. So kudos to you. And thank you for choosing me to be on this interview today.
Absolutely. And you guys, make sure you follow Attorney Evans on all social media at Evans IP Law. That's EVANSIP Law. And subscribe to her email list. It's on her website at evansiplaw.com. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Women in Tech with Ariana. Don't forget to hit subscribe, guys. It's your favorite host, Ariana, signing out.